Hi friends, Susie here, and the most soberest you'll probably ever hear me. There's two things I'd like to talk about. The first is Pride. Happy Pride Month! That being said, I want to deeply apologize if our occasional use of what is generally considered a homophobic slur offends or hurts anybody. I forget sometimes that some people didn't grow up being called things like dyke and lezzy and fag. And I realize also that they're now pretty hurtful words. I did grow up that way, and so at some point I embraced them and made them accurate descriptors in my mind instead of, you know, insults to take away their hurtful power. It takes the sting out of a jab if you refuse to be hurt by it, so that's what I've always done. That's how I've coped, but I realize I should probably just let them go and be done with them completely. I'm truly sorry that sometimes when we or I get drunk, the worst of the 90s comes out and we're going to try and do better. I apologize. Which brings me to the second topic. All of these uncomfortable topics. Welcome to 2020. We're participating in the podcast blackout. We initially had recorded an episode about the murder of George Floyd. The problem with that episode is that it centers around our feelings about it, our fears for our black and brown family, and the focus should not be on us and our feelings. The focus should be on the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Rashard Brooks, and, you know, Botham Jean, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile. The list just goes on and on of people, black people, murdered without justice in America. And it happens regularly. So the focus should actually just be on black people and how they feel and how they're coping and what they want. For once in America, the focus isn't about white people and how we feel. With that in mind, we are going to instead have a speech by a very wonderful woman, Kenyana Sunny Matthews. So we're going to include that speech here in its entirety, and I hope that you hear it and absorb it, and amplify black voices, support the black community, end modern segregation. Black lives matter. Next week we'll get back to the misandry and drunken bullshit. So thanks so much, and here's Sunny.
Our final speaker tonight is one of my greatest friends. And it's always an honor to work with and amplify and uplift her voice. Sunny Matthews is a fierce advocate, motivational speaker, and prophetic voice. She has a Juris Doctorate from the University of Akron School of Law, and 3 degrees, including political science, philosophy, and African American studies from Guilford College. It is always an honor to share a stage in space with her. Please welcome Sunny Matthews. I always start my speeches off with, hey y'all, so everybody knows I'm Southern. So I have to do some housekeeping before I speak, okay? Because I'm going to need some things from you guys to get through this. First, I'm black. So I'm hurting. Second, pregnant. So I'm emotional. And third, it's a little black baby boy. So I'm scared. So I'm gonna need your help to get through this because I have not gotten through this speech without crying. So bear with me. The first thing I need you to know is, as a black person, I do well when people show me they hear me. So please, say amen, say Black Lives Matter, say word, say yes, say hallelujah, yeah. Say whatever you need to say. Say yeah, yeah. Say howdy, yeah. So that I can get through this. All right. For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, a knee crushed the neck of George Floyd. What shocked you the most during that event? For 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
A knee crushed his neck, and we watched it. And all I want to know is, what shocked you in that video? For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, a knee crushed that neck of George Floyd. So what shocked you the most? Were you shocked by his pleas? Were you shocked by George Floyd's voice? Were you shocked when you heard him cry? Were you shocked when you heard him say, "Mama"? Were you shocked when he said, "Mama"? And then, did you hear that his mom has passed away? So when he said that, "Mama," he was seeing his mama at the pearly gates. He knew he was dying under a knee that was on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. We all listened to the 8 minutes and 46 seconds. We heard his last pleas for breath. We heard his final words of acceptance, saying that he understood as he met his mama. He said, "Mama." Did his pleas, did they finally wake you up? In those 8 minutes and 46 seconds, did racism become so real you had to move? I hope this is real enough for you to act. Were you shocked by Floyd still saying, "Sir, please, sir officer, please, I can't breathe"? Even in that moment, he was respecting the role we have put on black men, that we have put on black folks, the role to bear the brunt of white supremacy. "I can't breathe, sir. Please get off." Were you shocked by that? Because I was shocked. I was shocked by his pleas. In 8 minutes and 46 seconds, what I heard was a call to our past. Those 8 minutes and 46 seconds, his pleas, they bring to light that our history of racial violence is our present reality of racial violence. We are still fighting the same fight Emmett Till's mom fought. Why do you think they had 3 funerals? It was our version of the open casket. We are still trying to wake America up. And sad to say, we're still trying to wake white folks up. This moment is our generation's Emmett Till. It's our generation's Rodney King. It's going to be our generation's moment to realize that we have so much work to do. We must face America's dirty secret that racism is raw and real. I don't want my daughter to have another moment. I don't want my son to be a moment. We have so much work to do. In that 8 minutes and 46 seconds, did his pleas awaken you? For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, a knee crushed the neck of George Floyd. And what shocked you the most during that video? Were you shocked by the cold and uncaring ways the police moved? Were you shocked when they ignored his pleas? When they ignored the crowd? Were you shocked when you realized that when his body lost its life, they still kept that knee on his neck? This is racism at its finest moment. It thrives on folks not moving. It thrives on folks not acting. During that entire 8 minutes and 45 seconds, all of those officers bared down on this man and no one said enough. For hundreds of years, this is what oppression has done to people of color. It has bared down on blacks, Yet we as a society remain still, remain silent. We have to move. And I hope you were shocked enough in that moment to show up and show out. Because this was done in our name. In that 8 minutes and 46 seconds, we realized that racism perpetuates and harms people of color because it robs them of life. It robs them of a chance to live and move freely. You know, in most situations, and I should say this, for me, the definition of racism, to know the whole specific definition, you should attend a training. If you can't come to one of mine, go to some great folks. But for me, the definition of racism that's most raw and real for us today is the fact that it robs people of color of the benefit of the doubt. We are wrong until we are seen as right. We are ugly and still we are seen as beautiful. We are angry and violent until we prove otherwise. And what we're seeing in all of these killings is that people are not giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they're making their decisions right then and there. The folks who trapped and killed a man while jogging assumed because he was black, he was bad in that neighborhood. They assumed he had done something wrong. We are robbing them of the benefit of the doubt, and then we act on that. And I have a secret, and I want y'all to bear with me. I've been hallelujahing and praising God all night. So hear me when I say this. Don't think I'm trying to say you're a bad person. We all do it. We all judge each other instantly. And you know why? The system is set up for us to do this. We are supposed to move in this way. I'm supposed to see you and know I should be my articulate best so that you know I'm smart. I'm supposed to prove that I'm good enough to be in Cuyahoga Falls so that you guys know I'm okay. I don't even have a Black Lives Matter sign outside of my house because I don't want my neighbors to think I'm that radical. Oops. So we are presumed to be the worst version of people first until we prove we are different. And there's an opposite to that. There's privilege. White folks have the privilege to not have to battle that. White folks are assumed to be good. That's why we have so many interactions we see with white people and cops and white people and other white people where they are absolutely losing their shit. And somehow they make it out alive. Because we don't see them as being this insane, crazy person we need to protect. That's the privilege. Y'all, that's why when we have these white mass shooters who come out and do these horrific things, we still see them as individuals. We try to absolve them of their crimes by blaming mental illness. We try to figure out, where did they go wrong? Well, he was such a nice little boy. We show pictures of their beautiful preschool days, and we chalk it up to that one individual being unstable with self-righteous anger. But when we see people of color, we lump them together and we label them thugs. Every day, for far less than what these white men have done, we are able to strip the humanity from people of color, blacks in particular, and then we can bury a knee in their neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Dylann Roof went into a black church. He prayed with them. They prayed for him. And then he shot them. He got a hamburger. This man possibly had a counterfeit bill. We don't even know if he knew. And he died under the knee because that knee was to his neck. We can see Dylann Roof's humanity before we see the humanity of a father in a car with his kid in the back seat with a faulty headlight, who was pulled over and shot in front of his family. Rest in peace, Philando Castile. We look for reasons to blame the black man for his wrongful death. He had a record. If only he wouldn't have resisted. Aw, shoot. He was just so angry. Why wouldn't he be? This is white supremacy working hard It's casting its players in their respective roles. And then it justifies the ways in which that system interacts with them. And what we've always done as a society is some of us have tried to push back on that. And then others have said, it's not that bad. It doesn't happen often. Well, that's what happens in the big cities. The reality of the situation is it happens here. The reality of the situation is it happens every day. The reality of the situation is that it happens in smaller ways. If you take the time to listen to your Black brothers and sisters, I bet most of them got a story. I remember being 9 years old, and my sister and I, we're not bad kids. We weren't the best though, right? So we used to do this thing where we would play house, and we lived in a neighborhood that was adjacent to some rich white folks. And there was a family we knew who would go out of town, right? For like blocks of time, right? And we would, I will admit it, we were going into their house. I'm not gonna say breaking into because we didn't understand that, we were not. But we would play house because we've never seen a house this big. Their house would be empty, so we wouldn't touch anything. They would like live here only a couple months. I'm from North Carolina, so people come to visit. And we would go into the attic, and then we would come down to the downstairs, right? And we'd be like, ooh, we got some good air conditioning. It's not air conditioning. And we would play house in this house, right? And my mom found out one day, and she flipped out. She didn't flip out because we were not only like kind of breaking the law, but she flipped out because we could have been killed. And she knew it. You can't do that. You can't live like that. Why would you do that? And I will never forget the conversation. That was the first time that I felt like she had an active conversation with me about what it means to be Black in this society. And from that point on, I knew I had to move differently. For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, we watched a knee crush the neck of George Floyd. And I want to know what shocked you the most when you watched that video. Were you utterly crushed by the image of the actual knee buried in his neck? Because in those 8 minutes and 46 seconds, whites saw a Black person under that neck. And Blacks saw themselves, their brothers, and their sons Blacks saw themselves dying under the crushing weight of a full freaking body with a badge. Every time a Black person dies by the noose of racism, all Black people are traumatized. We suffer a loss because we know it could be us. We know it could be our sons. We know it could be our daughters. This collective understanding is why George Floyd isn't the only reason people are taking to the street. It's that need. It's that knee, it's that knee that has been the weight on our necks. It's that knee that has been pressure on our shoulders. It is that knee and what it signals to us. It is a symbol of oppression, and it is crushing my people. People are tired. I heard something the other day, it was a video, and she said, you better be glad that all we want is equity and not revenge. How long before we want revenge? When are you gonna stand up and make some changes before we just gotta? People are tired of the white weight of oppression, and they are taking to the streets. I can't be out there because I'm pregnant, so I'm trying to avoid COVID. This is like the first time I've been out of my house in like 4 months. So, it just really moves me to watch it. I watch the videos as people share about the Akron protests and the Cleveland protests and the protests here in Cuyahoga Falls. And I watch the videos from Boston and London and Paris. And I'm so moved with this. because this time I see so many whites have joined in this action. This is progress, but it is just the beginning. Until most Americans are willing to accept, especially white Americans, that these traumatic racial events will continue to happen if we don't make systemic freaking change. We will be here every day. Y'all, I would love to sing Kumbaya with you. Guilford College is a private little Quaker school. It was a lot of hippies. I've sung a lot of Kumbaya in my life around a campfire. I would love to do that, but this isn't going to solve 100 years of oppression. We can't all just hope that being nice to each other will make this better. We can't even all just hope that undoing police departments will make this better. We can't even just hope that firing these officers will make this better. This is us. This is America. This is who we are. And until we're ready to do the work in here, for all of us, we will be this America. It won't be the police, it'll be the medical department. It won't be the medical department, it'll be the education system. There's always a knee crushing our necks. So until we make systemic changes to these systems, we will always be under that knee. 8 minutes and 46 seconds can change the world, but only if it moves us, moves our hearts so we are not idle. I need you to hear me when I say, did it challenge you to educate yourself? Are you willing to pay attention to what's happening to people of color, especially blacks? Did the knee of oppression break your heart like it broke my heart? Do you feel its crushing burden like this mother carrying a baby boy? Kumbaya won't solve that, and a promise to be nice to each other won't solve that, and look at me in the eyes when you see me at the store won't solve that, but talking to your family will, but acknowledging that the social structures around you allow for two or three black people in your family circle will, in your friend circle will, but recognizing how your workspace operates by making the black people say hello to you first or they're rude. By recognizing all of these microaggressions that people of color have been living under. By recognizing that they can't wear the hair they want in certain settings. By recognizing you don't have a right to touch it. By recognizing that every black baby boy at one point is seen as dangerous because he's a black baby boy. We can't come together and just sing Kumbaya. We can't use kindness to change a system that made this possible. To be able to crush a man's neck for 8 minutes and 40 seconds, 46 seconds isn't going to weigh because we're kind to each other. I want you to consider the fact that we've had several publicized and filmed incidents similar to George Floyd. Boys as young as Tamar Rice, right here in our backyard, have died because their color was perceived as a threat, and we did not act. Whites don't have to worry about being shot in their home through their kitchen window while playing video games. Rest in peace, Atiana Jefferson. Whites can eat ice cream on a couch without wondering, did I lock the door? Somebody might run up here and shoot me. Rest in peace, Botham Jean. If you are jogging, you don't have to worry about the two pickup trucks driving the street you are on. Rest in peace, Ahmaud Arbery. All of these are recent events of racial history that is violent. This is not Emmett Till in the 60s. This is not Rodney King. This is now. For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, a knee crushed the neck of George Floyd. And I want to know what shocked you the most. Were you shocked that so many stood by and watched an innocent man die at the hand of racism? Many criticized citizens who were helpless. And I need you to hear this, because especially if you're white, you guys see police as people you can talk to and work some things out with. We don't. And that was a black community. And they beg But if they would have intervened, that's a charge, if not death. Obstruction of justice, if not death. We're asking them to step up, and we're asking them to do something that they can't do for themselves. Just like society blames blacks for a situation that was created over 100 years of oppression, we blame them. Why? Why are we blaming people who couldn't stand up to that aggression if they wanted to? Why are we blaming individuals, the public, for a systemic problem? It reminds me of how we blame individuals for their problems instead of seeing the systemic reasons. We are all that crowd. We are all that city when it erupted. We are this city when it erupted. And in order to feel real change, 8 minutes and 46 seconds led us to protest worldwide. Now what are we going to do? This moment isn't going to end racism, but it can be the beginning of the end. I want you to join us in the fight because Black lives matter. And when Americans, Black, white, Asian, everything, when we show up and shout that, when we show up and vote for change, when we show up and do better, then our world, our country will be better. What would happen if we changed all these systems? We challenged them. We stopped trying to be nice and we did real work. 8 minutes and 46 seconds. A knee crushed the neck of George Floyd. And what were you shocked by? Were you utterly gutted to hear from family, friends, and other Americans that believe this isn't a problem? Did the Tucker Carlsons and the Candace Owens of the world affect your heart? Were you like, what video did you watch? Did you not see what happened when that dude was killed under the knee of an officer? And do you not see that that wouldn't have been a white person? The reality of the situation is there are some people who don't. And we have to make it a problem for them not to. We have to challenge them how they feel. We cannot be silent. I'm sorry, but Thanksgiving is gonna suck this year. You don't get to act like that, Uncle Bob. I will stand up for my Black neighbors. I will stand up for my Black friend. I will stand up for Sonny's Black baby boy. Black lives matter. We're almost done. Okay. Y'all, this isn't just about the police. This isn't just about the police. And that's why, you know, there's been this whole discussion about whether or not we should accept the photos when we see police kneeling, whether or not we should see their humanity and all this. And I actually went to law school. I worked for the court system. I know some great officers. Here's the problem. We always deal with an issue when it comes to race and racism by trying to find an individual or a group or an entity blame so we can fix that and not do anything else. These police officers are a product of America. The same way they looked at those Black folks, be honest, the white woman who locked the door did it. The white woman who tried to get a birdcatcher arrested did it. This is in our hearts from birth. We are taught, treat them different. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to recognize that we all have work to do. We all have to make a way to deal with oppression and privilege. When you talk to your friends and family about race and race relations, make them think about those kids who live near Joy Park in Akron. Would they be able, if they had the same schools, would they easily be led astray as they are now? If Black moms were listened to in the hospital, would they be dying at a faster rate than white mothers? If Black youth were brought home to their parents when they made a simple mistake, like white youth are, instead of going to juvenile, would we be able to see them overcome their mistakes? I want you to push yourself to think about all the ways in which we move and act with each other, because that affects all of this. I once had a white man who asked me a simple but fully loaded question. He said, "Don't you consider yourself American? You know, not just black, but American." Absolutely not. How can I? America doesn't see me as American. American sees me as black American. And in this skin is power. In this skin is courage. In this skin is resilience. I am black. I'm proud of it. You don't have to judge me and treat me differently in a negative way because of it. I am a black American. Southern one too. My mom's straight out of Alabama. We don't live in America where people of color are able to just live and love. We all know that. We live in a world where they're feared, disadvantaged, and treated as less than. And for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, a knee crushed the neck of George Floyd. And I want to know, what shocked you the most? Was it the pleas? Mama, I can't breathe. The coldness of the officers to just stand there with their hands in their pockets. The actual knee that was buried into his neck. The helplessness of all those who stood around. Or the aftermath. Were you shocked at those who were defending the actions and wanting the protesters to go away? Wanting to be able to get down the street? Wanting to be able to just make this go away. Y'all, we got to get honest about systems of oppression and how racism works and how we all have suffered because of racism. Not race. Racism separates, divides, and oppresses us. You know, we have a lot of work to do to dismantle these systems. But until we do, people of color are going to live in fear. Is that what we want for them? Is that what we want for me? Is that what we want for my baby boy? When we talk about racism today, we're not talking about the card-carrying member of the KKK. We're not talking about the people who have hate written in their skin in the form of swastikas. When we talk about white supremacy today, we're not talking about those dudes. I ain't scared of them. Most of them aren't about nothing. I'm scared of the folks who, in instance, rely on that white superiority, that white supremacy, and make decisions that could kill me. I'm scared of the folks who have not faced the fact that there are differences among us that could get me killed. Those are the ones who scare me. KKK? Come on. Let's go. But little Susie in the park? Oh, you better be nice to her. I ain't trying to go to jail when her mama come over here freaking out because you didn't share your toy. You know, I have to be honest and let you guys know one more thing and then I think I'm going to be done. Racism to me acts like a cancer. It makes it so that we see certain people in certain lights. We can see the good in whites, but we all see the bad in the blacks. We see them as crazy and violent. Our society makes music, TV, and even racist crime statistics. I just have to say this. Black on black crime does not exist. You hurt people where you live. White folks, as someone who works for the courts, you always attack white people. Black folks, as someone who works for the courts, we always attack black people. It's just the way we roll. It's because racism has us divided. So this is called Caucasian Falls. Like, let's be real. That doesn't exist, okay? But those statistics are used to validate the idea that black men are armed and dangerous just by virtue of the color of their skin. And they are not. They are assumed that you must treat them like animals. Remain in control, or they will dominate you. If you don't, then they will shoot you if you're an officer. If you don't, then they will ruin your schools. If you don't, your parks, your neighborhoods, your America will suffer unless you keep the weight of oppression on people of color, especially black men. Let's be honest about what we wanted out of a police force. We decided, I think it happened mainly during the war on drugs, but we really decided that we didn't want Andy Griffin anymore. We didn't want people to know who the police officer in their communities were. We wanted RoboCop. We wanted cops that came bearing down and threw away the bad guys. And now cops don't know the difference. We wanted cops that were ready to light a fire and take them off to jail. Now they're lighting a fire and killing folks and tear gassing us with the money we gave them. Because we put crime and criminals and police over education, public health, mental health, and drug addiction. We made that choice. We decided let's be tough on crime. We decided not to help people. We decided not to see this as cries for help. We decided to deny the fact that economic injustice will always make the poor make decisions that are short-term thinking and bad choices. We made that choice. And now we are faced with what it gave us, a society that is broken. I'm ready to fix it. Are you? For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, that knee showed me that we have work to do. What if we were to have community policing? What if we had a policing that knew who they were working with, that lived there? Police officers that knew the kids and said, I'm gonna tell your mama. Versus what we got now. What if we had that? I think if we had that, the cop who killed Tamir Rice would have known him. And in those 2 minutes, he wouldn't have seen him as dangerous. He would have seen him as Tay-Tay, go home. The cops who wouldn't have killed Breonna Taylor as she slept, because they would have been like, that's Tay-Tay's, leave her alone. Eric Garner would have been alive because the cop would have been a neighbor and said, you know you can't do this. But we don't have that. We have cops coming from all over old Northeast Ohio to police Akron. We have cops coming from all over places who are there for their shift and only see the ugly. And then we expect them to do better? When we don't see anything but the ugly. For me, racism isn't about the card-carrying, N-word-using, hate-filled member of the KKK. It is about how our society allows us to interact with each other in a harmful way. It in fact requires us to do even more than just be well-meaning. They choked the life of him out with a knee in 8 minutes and 46 seconds, and then they went home. And if we had not seen that video and taken to the streets, they'd still be at home. That is a problem. That is an issue. We have work to do. We are gathered here to honor the life and acknowledge the tragic death of George Floyd. His death, I hope, will be a catalyst for change. I think it can if we're willing to do the work. I just wanted to spend some time to wake you up to the fact that the racial terroristic history of America is the racial terroristic present of America. That racism is so much more than simple hate now. That we all have a role in undoing it. If the knee on someone's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds didn't shock you enough, didn't shock your neighbors enough, didn't shock your mama enough, it is your duty to shake them. It is your duty to wake them. It is your duty to put it in their face. I'm not gonna leave y'all empty-handed. I got some steps you can take, of course. I want you to listen. Before you judge what a person of color is telling you, listen. Listen to the whole story. Listen to their whole words. Listen. I want you to attend protests and marches, but stay in your lane. Let people of color lead that work. Let them take power in their own liberation. Let them decide what happens, how it happens, and when it happens, and support them. I've been really amazed at the protests that I'm seeing, especially some of the local ones, where white folks are cocooning and protecting as people of color do this work. I've been really surprised by the number of white folks that have shown up with their babies. Y'all, that's gonna be power. Your kids are growing up differently. I want you to donate to Black Lives Matter, to donate to local groups, the NAACP. You know, I don't know if many people know this since we're talking about Candace and Owens and all, but Candace Owens got helped as a teenager by the NAACP because there were some white kids that were torturing her at a high school. But now there's no problem. Please stop sharing her videos. Don't even share them to say, I can't believe she said this. Don't even click on the bait because she gets the like off those clicks. Don't let her take you down that path. And Tucker Carlson too, he's a idiot. Okay, the local group we chose to donate today to donate to today is called The Womb. One of the reasons I chose them is that they do local work right here in Akron, specifically. I know people are like, why didn't they choose Cuyahoga Falls? And I'm gonna be real. Cuyahoga Falls kids, the black folks here, the people of color here, we got issues too. Like, there ain't no lying about that, you know? We got some systemic oppressive issues here as well. But I think that the systemic oppressive issues in Akron, if we help with those, it'll trickle here. I also think that they do some work here, so it'll funnel its way. I'd be down if some black folks wanted to start something here in Cuyahoga Falls, because we belong here. This is our city, and so we can take it over too. But The Womb is named, it speaks for volumes for what it does. It's trying to nurture its people whole. And a lot of the work they do is surrounded around criminal justice work, but they also do educational work. They're going to be putting together, every year they do like back to school bags for kids. But this year, I think if we don't have the traditional school that we think we may not have, they're going to be trying to do homeschooling kits, that kind of stuff. They do some really good work, and I just wanted to support them. So if you can, please donate. There's a table back there. Or like we said, the link is in the thing. Attend trainings. I host trainings all the time. I'm doing an online one July 8th, but you can also reach out to me on Facebook and I'll set something up with your community, your church, your whatever. You gon' pay me, I'm not gonna lie to you, because people of color have been standing in front of white folks for hundreds of years, speaking their hearts, their truth, and their oppression without getting paid. So now it's time to show investment. But I promise you it will change your life. Like, there's some white folks that I know I see here, and like, it's changed your life. Say something, like, where you at? Where my family at? Another thing you can do is educate yourself. There's plenty of online work, books. White Fragility is one that I think people should start with. Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? That's another one. But don't go asking your black friend unless you really know that's a black friend. If you got a black friend that's really just an acquaintance, don't do that. They don't owe you that work. But if you got a true black friend, talk to them. And just say, I want to know who you are and what your experiences are. And if they want to talk, let them talk. If they don't, leave it. You can do this work on your own. There's one other thing. You got to call out racism. You got to be honest about microaggressions. I'm going to tell you one microaggression that most white folks don't see. And then when I tell you, I bet when you're in the store, you're going to not only see it, but you're going to catch yourself doing it. I will be walking in a store, looking at something in an aisle, and let's say, like, this is the shelf and this is me, and a white person will come and reach and not acknowledge I'm looking at anything. Don't say anything, don't acknowledge me, I don't exist. Grab something, put it in their cart, and walk away. If I do that, it's like, excuse me. So these are microaggressions, we need to learn about those. Educate yourself. It won't be comfortable at first, but in that uncomfortableness, you'll get freedom. And also, just don't stop. Keep showing out. Keep showing up. If there's a group that needs to hear my voice, invite me. I'm there. Let me have the baby first. Remember that those 8 minutes and 46 seconds were harsh and brutal. When you feel weak, remember those 8 minutes and 46 seconds. When you can't do this work, remember there was a knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. You have no choice. Remember that if you really carry the sign, sign that said Black Lives Matter, then you better do the work so Black Lives Matter. I want you to do me a favor in that 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I want you to feel the weight of that time. I want you to feel the length of that time. I want you to feel how much they had to ignore to keep that knee on his neck for what?
David Parker. Long come. And we say the same. In their voice. Remain Christmas. Jermaine Lee. Joseph May. Say their names. And
thank you.